When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
John Grisham is an expert storyteller whose unforgettable characters fight for justice in a world that isn't always fair. As one of the top 10 wealthiest writers in the world, he is a Southerner who also has a passion for seeking justice and freedom for innocents who have been imprisoned. Join us at the table as we discuss the thrill of John Grisham.
Welcome to the Steel Magnolias Podcast. We are two sisters here to have uplifting conversations about life in the South.
The South is full of beautiful diversity in landscape, people groups, and culture, and we want to showcase each part. We've got plenty of room at our table, so pull up your chair.
Welcome back to our Uplifting Conversations table. I am your co-host, Laura Beth.
And I'm Lainey.
And we sisters are excited to have a chat today about John Grisham. You heard in the intro some of the accolades he's received, and we have lots more of those to mention. But before we get started, the saga of Gautier, Gautier.
Oh my goodness, continues. The saga continues.
You know how last week I said somebody lives there? Like, that's why this is important.
And you said Gautier.
So initially I said Gautier.
Yes.
I was told that's incorrect. Then I got messages from y'all that said Gautier.
Apparently, is that wrong too?
And then I got a message that it's actually Gautier. Gautier. Oh. Do you hear the difference?
I do.
And actually, that's almost getting closer to my original TA.
That's funny.
But here's why I believe that this particular message was incredibly a good source. It's named after her great-great-grandfather.
Okay.
Gautier. Hello.
We gotcha.
So you just never know who's listening to the Steel Magnolias podcast.
My goodness.
It has been
a descendant.
So hilarious.
Of the Gautier family.
To hear all the connections. One of our listeners that lives over in Austin that you and I have messaged with before, her son 50 years ago had a first grade teacher named Mrs. Gautier.
Okay.
Relative of our other listener. I mean, it's just like there's a
web. Isn't that so fun? Again, why we need to gather.
We need
to gather. Because we need to meet all these people and get y'all together.
I know. Y'all might have so many things in common beyond just love of Southern culture. You might be related or share teachers or who knows.
And all full of stories because we're, you know, good storytellers.
Well, today's episode might be as close to a true crime podcast as we'll ever get.
Oh my gosh. Man, crime sells, doesn't it? Like, this is yes. going to be proof. You know, all the top podcasts practically are true crime. And then all the top shows, or it seems like it, are true crime. What is it? I guess it makes you feel a little bit better about yourself. I don't know what it is about crime.
But. I mean, I was actually going to save this comment for later, but trials, even when you have no ties to any person, place, or event involved, they are absolutely suspenseful.
Well, like I got caught up, I'm not even going to mention which one, but recovering from a surgery, I got all caught up into, because I had a lot of time to read, a trial that hasn't happened yet. The person still hasn't gone to trial. I'm like, when are we going to get this going? Because I have theories and I think I know what happened.
Well, that's part of it is you get invested and you've got your own
figuring it out
investigation hat that you like to wear. And that's why you can't even watch 2 minutes of a Dateline or 2020 because the storytelling gets you
you're hooked.
Sucked in.
Now you're,
And I believe that's John Grisham has built his catalog of novels around such subject matters. And we are excited because he has every place of experience to write them in such a
That's what's so fascinating about this to me, right? He didn't seek out to be a writer.
No.
He seeked out to be an attorney.
Yeah. He's quoted as saying, "I seriously doubt I would have ever written the first story had I not been a lawyer. I never dreamed of being a writer. I wrote only after witnessing a trial."
Wow. Yeah. So, and I think that's continued. He's consumed with stories of injustice and all of that. And so you're going to continually be thinking through storylines now that he's had such success. Well, I loved an article I saw from Time Magazine recently. It says, at 68, he may no longer be publishing's fresh young hotshot. His books sell a fraction of the copies that they used to, and it's been 19 years since he had a feature film made. Yet every fall, like clockwork, Grisham publishes a new legal thriller, and every fall it shoots to the top of the bestseller list. Since breaking out with the firm in 1991, so that's not his first novel, we'll get to that, but meaning this is when he broke loose on the breakout one. Grisham has released 48 consecutive New York Times number one bestsellers, a feat no other writer has matched.
That's crazy.
Amazing.
Wow.
I don't
know how you still have words in you, but like we said,
he's immersed in
he's law. Writing what he's seen.
He's,
and trials
he's friends
and,
with lawyers, and so he's hearing their stories.
And you really can't make this stuff up. Like, trials are interest. People are interesting, weird creatures.
They really, really are.
We're all in it. So, yeah, you mentioned, sorry, go ahead. What
were
you going to say?
Well, I'm amazed with some of these statistics. So, his books have sold literally hundreds of millions of copies worldwide. Along with Tom Clancy and J.K. Rowling, Grisham is one of only three authors to have sold 2 million copies of the first printing.
My goodness. Whoa.
So, yeah. He's had such success.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that quote from Time Magazine, he may be selling a fraction of the copies he used to, but they're still ending up on the number one bestseller list. So,
Go so figure. It might sound like, oh, so he's not, you know.
No, he's still hitting
He's still hitting it. Yeah.
And cha-ching, cha-ching.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't even believe when I looked through the titles of his works how big of blockbuster films so many of these were. But let's start, like you referenced a minute ago, with The Firm was his breakout, but it was not his first.
That's right. So his first novel was A Time to Kill. It was published in June of 1989, 4 years after he began writing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Because he practiced law from, he was admitted to the Mississippi Bar in 1981. Okay, sorry,
go ahead. Let's back up. So he did graduate from Mississippi State.
Yes.
We didn't even talk about, he was born, you want to go into all of that?
Yeah, let's do.
Okay, so he was born in Jonesboro, Arkansas.
Yes.
His dad was John Ray Grisham, so he's a junior, and his mom, Wanda. His father was a construction worker and a cotton farmer. I mean, just very humble beginnings.
Mm-hmm.
When he was 4 years old, apparently his parents settled in a suburb of Memphis. So it's
South
Mississippi.
Haven?
Yeah. Mississippi, but suburb of Memphis.
Yeah.
And he later went to Mississippi State University and then a doctorate from the University of Mississippi School of Law.
Okay.
He's been very good to Mississippi.
Yes.
We can talk about that.
Yes.
And to his roots, I would say. He's still been really good to his roots. But he practiced criminal law for a decade and then served in the Mississippi House of Representatives from 1983 to 1990.
Okay.
Which I'm sure that brought a lot of D.C. stories.
Oh, gosh.
Can you imagine?
Yes.
So, yeah, it's just fascinating that it's been a lot of natural progression of being in law.
Yeah.
And even a couple of different sides of that, that would give him all this great material.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was a trial he had observed in 1984. Like you said, it took him 3 years to write the novel, A Time to Kill. And that definitely deals with the subject matter of a lot of his works. And that is the legal and social repercussions, moral repercussions when a Mississippi black man is tried for the murder of two white men who raped his 10-year-old daughter.
And I've heard him in an interview say, you know, it's really hard to break out of, we're all racist in some form or fashion, mm-hmm. and breaking out of the stereotypes we make and that kind of thing. Yeah. But he had put himself in that person's story. Mm-hmm. And like, if it was my daughter, I would probably have taken maybe matters into my own hands.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Made for a great book.
Yeah.
And then,
but what's interesting is that it was rejected 30 times by agents and by 15 publishers.
Yeah.
So
it wasn't self-published. He did finally get a publisher.
Yeah. But definitely has a story of rejection and a hard road to get started. Because I'm sure he was thinking, why am I not doing law right now? Like, this publishing.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine?
This is for the birds.
Yes. And then I also, in a different interview, I heard him say he ordered 1,000 copies of the book. And bookstores didn't know him. He had no accolades whatsoever. So nobody really even, he was trying to, like, with these 1,000 books, book some events.
Yeah.
So he could sell them.
Yeah, because bookstores weren't carrying them, I'm sure. And yeah.
And none of them really wanted to.
Oh, gosh.
Other than 5. Bookstores, which he has stayed loyal to.
Wow.
In Mississippi, Arkansas, and Memphis.
Wow.
One of them being Square Books in Oxford, where we've been. Mm-hmm. And that's where he still has a lot of
he does signings regularly there. And
yeah, in each of those 5 stores, he signs 2,000 copies a year.
Oh, wow.
And sends them to them.
Wow.
Which I love that.
That's
that
cool.
He's stayed faithful to the 5 that believed in him.
Hey, those early supporters, people that championed you before everyone else came on board. Those
you remember
are some gold star people. Yeah.
You remember them. Well, I just loved that his next idea was, okay, if bookstores won't do events, maybe I could get some libraries.
Yeah.
To host me to do events.
Surely libraries need content and stuff, right?
It took him 35 libraries to get rid of his 1,000 books.
Every self-published author or author-to-be listening to this is like, okay, so this is real. This is really how you have to grind and hustle.
And keep in mind, this is even somebody who would have been known as a state representative. I mean,
true.
This isn't just Joe Schmo.
That's true.
Right? He's elected.
Wow.
Official and attorney. And he's peddling books at the library. Well, it took him, like I said, 35 library events to get rid of those 1,000 books. And now, and those are obviously first edition.
True.
Now a first edition of A Time to Kill goes for about $4,000.
Really? How interesting.
Isn't that wild?
Wow.
So there you go.
Wow.
But.
Humble beginnings.
This was
for
pre
sure.
Writing the firm.
Yes.
So
yes.
Who knew what was coming other than God?
Yeah.
God knew. So, I love one of the things I heard him say was he and his wife refer to things in their life as BF or AF.
I bet. Before the
firm. Before the firm or after the firm.
Yeah. Life-changing, for
sure. Totally life-changing.
So you got sucked into the firm big time.
100% sucked in. Like, I had never been sucked in a book I was reading by choice.
Do you know how, do you ever remember at the time, like, was it just everybody was talking about this
book?
Well,
it was the hot book. It was 91, I believe. Is that right?
And it's set in Memphis, so maybe as Tennesseans, maybe we were hearing about it a lot.
He's from Kentucky. Went to Western Kentucky. Mitch McDear went to Western Kentucky.
The character, yeah, not John Grisham.
The character.
Yeah,
went to Western Kentucky.
Yeah, where
it's
went to
Memphis.
College. Yes.
It talks about the panhandle some, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
And like things I knew.
Yeah.
Places I knew. I knew the Peabody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hotel in Memphis. So it was just very unique for me to have this, all these places that I knew.
Yeah.
And then for it to be just, I was just hooked. Mm-hmm. I couldn't put it down.
So
literally.
So suspenseful.
And so, yeah, I just.
I mean, we actually
had the paperback and.
Uh huh. We had, and it was so thick. What a commitment. You know, I mean, I know there's a lot of really thick books out now, but I just feel like that was a big tackle for you at that time. But I mean, do you
remember? By choice, because I read thick books for school. True. But by choice, I was reading this, right?
No, you were so hooked. We were on that one camping trip.
And I was reading by flashlight in the tent.
Gulf Shores.
Yeah.
And yeah, the story goes, we've shared it on here before, but yeah, we were three of us in a tent, Mom, Lainey, and I, and here's Lainey reading by flashlight. And I'm pretty sure it was only because there was a flashlight that we got so freaked out when we heard a little stirring.
More than a little.
And then
like,
we thought, shadow.
Is it a bear? Like, what's happening out there?
Screamed, ran to the car, because we were car camping, I guess is what you would call it. Like, the car was
We weren't
nearby.
In an Airstream, y'all.
No, we were in a tent, but the car was right there. And then there went that little armadillo.
My gosh. Well, the firm. Yeah, that's what I was reading.
Well, yeah. And it is. It's like, I'm sorry, I haven't read it. So I'm like squeezing in my intensity of remembering it just from the film.
Uh-huh.
They
hit the jackpot with Tom Cruise playing Mitch McDear.
Yes.
Because he's so good looking.
Yes.
And, you know, just... Yeah, he was perfect.
The perfect time to have Tom Cruise in your movie, too.
And I would say, and he would say, I'm sure, John Grisham would say, he's had great screenwriters and great actors getting involved in these projects.
Yeah.
Because, wow.
So can we talk about some of the books that have also been filmed?
Sure.
Because a lot of these...
I don't know that I have all of those
listed
out, but
I do.
I know some of them.
So,
okay.
The Firm, A Time to Kill... Matthew McConaughey.
Perfect
Hello.
For that role.
The Pelican Brief. Julia Roberts.
Perfect.
The Client.
Susan Sarandon. Perfect.
Now, these next three I actually haven't seen. The Chamber, Runaway Jury, and The Rainmaker. But they also have really big casts. The Rainmaker, I'm surprised I didn't see because it was Matt Damon and Claire Danes. I love Claire Danes.
Oh, yeah.
And Danny DeVito. That one is about a... Matt Damon is a young lawyer, very freshly just passed the bar, and he ends up getting paired up with Danny DeVito and is taking down an insurance company that is denying claims for a year at a time in hopes that each customer just gives up. So, like,
Which, that stuff's real, too. All the things they require for these people to have hoops to jump through.
I was reading through this, and I was like, wow, sounds like we've just found ourselves a timeless film.
Right?
Because that
some things
like
never change.
Yesterday's phone calls or, yeah. So, yeah, it was interesting to look through the cast because I was thinking the same thing of, man, whoever the casting agent was had some connects or maybe one massive box office hit was just rolling into the next. I don't know, but...
Well,
there are some really good casts.
He has always, you know, with each book, I don't think he's writing the book for a movie, but mm-hmm. he has in mind, mm-hmm. will this become a movie?
Yeah.
And every time, it's my understanding, different, I don't know how that world works, Laura Beth, you more than you probably do, but these different movie houses or whatever will buy the rights and then sometimes give it back, you know, like, give it back to him.
Okay.
Like they're not going to do it.
Okay.
Every book he's had that happen. Where different ones will want the rights and then they haven't done it.
Yeah.
And so he's just, you know, still holding out hope that that could happen again.
Yeah.
And I have to say, I wonder if Larbeth gifted me The Exchange.
Yeah.
Which is his newest book that he has out. Of course, he's already knows the next two.
Now, the reason I did this was because, like we just said, I have fond memories of you reading The Firm and how impactful it was when you were reading it. And this is the sequel to The Firm.
That's right. So in full disclosure, I probably read two or three of his books early on. And then I kind of was out.
Yeah.
Nothing against his writing or any of that. I just had moved on to other interests. And legal thrillers are not my thing.
Yeah.
Personally.
Did you know The Firm's storyline before you started reading it? Because I know you said it was fun to come up on all these places that were familiar.
I knew it was a legal thriller. Like, I knew it was a legal thriller.
Okay.
And that the main character went to Western.
Okay.
I think that's all I knew.
Okay. Cool.
Maybe that's probably what made me like, oh, and I had the paperback. Like, yeah. I didn't have the nice hardback.
Yes.
Because I was, you know, 21. So I wouldn't have probably even had the money to buy a big, heavy
or book. It came out in paperback first.
Maybe.
And they might have been testing to see how it did.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
Well, so the exchange is, I mean, we're this many books in, and he's just now gone back to Mitch McDear.
Right.
And he's had, over the years, a lot of people, when are you bringing Mitch back? When are you bringing Mitch back?
I bet.
And he didn't have in mind that he would.
Okay.
So I guess I'll just say, you know, at the end of his book is different than the end of the movie.
Okay.
But he and Mitch McDear and his wife have to flee the mob.
Yeah.
So it's a very dramatic and scary getaway.
Yes.
And so they have some money, but they are risking, you know, they've got to get out because people will be looking for them. So that just left you hanging.
Yeah.
So this book picks up with where they've been.
Okay.
But I thought this was fascinating. So in the in this book, so it's been how many years?
Golly.
40? No.
30.
30. 30 years.
Yeah, a little over 30.
If this is not him.
30 years later.
30 years later. And this is what I think is funny. This is Lainey's take.
So he's still young.
Is, I think it's 15 years later.
Okay.
But I literally heard John Grisham say in an interview, when he saw Maverick.
Okay.
He's like, Tom Cruise still looks so good.
Wow.
He does not look his age. I can write the book. Like, I can make him, the, you know, an age that he could pass for.
That
so I think he is hoping this one's going to get a movie and Tom Cruise will do it again. But I don't know.
Hey, it worked the first time, maybe.
Because Tom Cruise looks 40.
He does. Yes, he does.
His build.
Yeah.
More than his face.
He's aged very well,
He's doing something right. Okay, so I just, I find it fascinating. I'm going to tell my thoughts so far on the exchange. I am more than halfway through.
Okay.
But this is completely different.
How?
Mitch is completely different. So he had to flee the country.
Okay.
And he is a New York hotshot lawyer for a big worldwide firm. So there's nothing really Southern about Mitch to me anymore.
Oh.
Nothing's set in the South. He did a little teaser that was really just to appease, I think, us that were wanting Mitch to be what Mitch was, where he does a quick little thing in Memphis, but nothing else. Like, that was just the literal beginning of the book.
Wow.
This takes place in New York, Italy.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And Libya.
Okay.
So, and I believe he was inspired, again, by a true story of a lawyer he knows who's dealing with a case similar.
He's like, I've got Maverick and Mission Impossible in my head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm a little disappointed in that we're not in the South.
Yeah.
We're not. Not that I only read books in the South, y'all, but Mitch McDear is Southern, and I wanted him to be.
Yeah.
You know. So.
That's so interesting. I mean, that would be like, I'm trying to find, or in my mind, get an example. You know, Fannie Flagg did her sequel to Fried Green Tomatoes about 30 years after that book and film was such a big deal. And she did stay.
Right. If they had opened a restaurant in New York, a pizzeria, are you enticed?
Yeah.
No, it's completely different.
It is different.
Nothing wrong with a pizzeria in New York.
Especially,
it sounds pretty dang good. But...
Yeah, it's just not what you fell in love with the first time.
Right.
So that makes sense.
So if Atticus Finch is now in Libya, he is still Atticus Finch, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just not what I kind of had hoped. So I'll be interested to see how it concludes, but it's been different than I thought.
Yeah.
Because I thought if we were going to revisit, it would be more of a revisiting of... You know, now he's got kids and it's just different.
Mm-hmm. But in general, most avid readers always say the movie is not nearly as good, you know, as the book. So I think it's interesting that Grisham even has sort of a slant or an interest or even an angle that he is open to that, because I feel like that contradicts a lot of what you feel like an author would have.
I don't know what a lot of other readers say. They may think he's a total sellout. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever.
They do make for great films, too. So.
And great royalties.
Yeah. So he does not practice law anymore. He actually stopped
for years.
In 1990 is what I read.
Okay.
That was after. Because
this writing thing's been working out pretty well.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, after having the success of the firm, he just began writing full time. So, you know, he's still got the experience. But you mentioned kind of early on in the intro what an avid or an advocate, I guess.
Yes.
For justice that he is. I read that he is actually on the board of directors for the Innocence Project.
Yes.
Which campaigns for freedom and exoneration of unjustly convicted people on the basis of DNA evidence. So he's
which
on
has
that
come
board and,
since.
Whew, yeah, that's
since
all.
Since he's been writing.
Right, correct. So that's still exciting to see him championing causes like that.
Yeah, putting his time into that. Well, I love that he married Renee Jones on May 8th of 1981 and they've remained married.
That's exciting.
Sometimes success does things.
That's true.
To send people in other directions. But they have two children, a daughter named Shay and a son named Ty. And I looked them up and Ty looks just like him and is a lawyer. I'm
oh
like, how
gosh.
Cute is that?
Wow.
I don't know if.
Good looking dudes then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really good looking guys. The Renee and John split their time. They have a home in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Okay.
Which is where their son practices law.
Okay.
They have a home in Destin and a condominium in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, which is where their daughter lives.
Okay.
So their former longtime home that is on a farm outside of Oxford, they donated to the University of Mississippi.
So cool.
And it's my understanding that was in 2011. That they donated that home. It's my understanding that home houses up-and-coming writers that are working for the university or something. Like, really cool.
Yeah, like writing
to think
workshops
about
or something.
Writing still
That's
happening
cool.
in the house. And
That's very cool.
I love things like that. He remains a fan of Mississippi State University's baseball team. And I write that in here because I have heard great things about Mississippi State baseball. And
really?
I want to experience it.
Oh.
Yes. I met somebody in Florida this past year that was like, you've got to do an episode on Mississippi State baseball and the left field lounge. So.
Oh, well, okay.
Apparently he has written a book, an introduction for a book called Duty Noble Field.
Okay.
A celebration of MSU baseball. So it must be a big thing. We got to check this
fun.
Out.
That's fun. I've had on my radar the Savannah Bananas. Do you know about them? That made me think of baseball.
And
when
what
you
are
said
their
that.
Cheerleaders called? They have a funny name, too, because they're old ladies.
Oh, my goodness.
Is it the.
I did not know that.
Savannah Banana Nanas. I think, because they're old and they're adorable. How do we get off subject like this? But. Yes, I want to check out the Savannah Bananas, too. Well, anyhow, John Grisham has definitely made an impact on our world. But
yes.
Certainly on the South.
Yes.
And I love that he's still, you know, yes, he's, I'm sure, very in all the intelligent circles and wealthy circles of the Northeast and all, but he's spending most of his time in the South.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty awesome.
Which can't help but keep you a little rooted when you don't get geographically too far.
Yeah, that's right.
So, well, we celebrate the works that he has brought forth, and yeah, he's just, like you said, been so steadfast year after year cranking
Every
those
year.
Novels out.
Yeah.
So, exciting.
Keep at it, Mr. Grisham.
It's exciting. You'll,
another movie will come if it's supposed to.
That's right. All right. Well, that was our episode this week. We hope that you have a fantastic week and
peace be with y'all as you read whatever you read.
You've just listened to an episode of the Steel Magnolias Podcast, an independent show funded solely on support from listeners like you and a few advertisers from time to time. For reminders of what we just said and links to what we just mentioned, take a look at the description of this episode. They are right there. Are you enjoying the show? We hope you'll text a friend or loved one to tell them about this podcast. And make sure they know how to get to a podcast first. We invite you to join our mailing list to be the first to know about episodes, giveaways, and events. Sign up at steelmagnoliaspodcast.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.